Yeah, good to be back. Good to see you all here this morning. Yes, yes, yes. For those of you who maybe this is your first time and you're like, I don't know what you're talking about. You've been gone. I don't get it. My wife and I were in the UK for 10 days celebrating our 20th anniversary. And it was remarkable. Just an incredible trip. I'm having a hard time remembering everything we did. We accomplished so much during that time. She came back with a cold, though, so she's a little under the weather, which is why Justin so graciously stepped in and helped host this morning. But it is very, very, very good to be back. And wow, like, what a reminder of what we have here, worship team. That was incredible. Really, really incredible. I got a little sweaty during that. I feel like if you get sweaty, like, man, something good happened or something. But anyway, we did have a great trip. And while I was gone the last 2 weeks, I want to thank DJ and Jesse Bollinger for filling in while I was gone. But my wife and I had the absolute pleasure of actually worshiping at a couple other places. You may remember maybe a month and a half ago, many of you committed to say, hey, look, I'm going to be here every week. And even if I'm out of town, I'm going to find a place to worship. Well, my wife and I did that very thing. In fact, the first place we went to, we had just gotten to the UK. We went to Holy Trinity, Brompton. This is where we are. And my wife, Kristen, she studied abroad in 2001, and this was her home church while she was there, before we ever met. And so we got to worship there. It was very emotional for her, just a cool place. And then last Sunday, we were actually in Scotland, in Edinburgh, Scotland, and we worshiped at a 900-year-old cathedral, which was unbelievable. It's a Presbyterian church, very different style of worship than ours, but was very, very, very cool. What was really neat about the whole experience was seeing the fact that, you know, we experience church here at 32nd and Thunderbird every week, but what we do here is happening all over the world. That God's mission, yeah, I know, that God's mission is at work in the UK, in Scotland, in England, everywhere. And it was just such a pleasure to be among other believers in such a unique way. Thank you for allowing us to be able to get away and do that. It truly was a gift, but it is great to be back this morning. As Justin said, 4 weeks left. 2.5 years later, we are fine. No, that's no joke. We started the first weekend in January 2021. So we are making our way towards the end, and that's exciting. You won't have to watch that bumper video anymore. It's going to be great. It's going to be really cool. But as I came to our passage today, I was keenly reminded of an experience I had when I was about 12 years old. Growing up in the state of Minnesota, which has been referred to as the state of hockey, if you didn't know, I spent a lot of my summers on rollerblades. Now, it was the 90s, and rollerblades were cool then, all right? I don't know how they are now. I don't think I'd ever rollerblade now, but they were cool then. And I was a hockey player, and so me and my friends, we would spend the entire off-season rollerblading all over the city that we grew up in. And we would play endless games of hockey in my friend's cul-de-sac day in and day out. And it was a primary mode of transportation for us in the small suburb of St. Paul where I grew up. And again, it was the 90s, so there were no cell phones, but there was an expectation, at least in my family, that I would be home for dinner, or I would at least be home by dark. And if I wasn't, I could usually hear my dad whistle for me at least a half a mile away, which was pretty cool. But on one particular night, one of my friends and I, we were rollerblading, and it was getting dark, but we were in an area that we loved to go to because it had a bunch of hills. And so we would ride up the hills, and then we would coast down them on our rollerblades as fast as we could. It was a great time. And as the sun began to set, we decided to hit this one last hill, which we loved. It was the biggest. It was the fastest. And so my friend went first, and he kind of got like chickened out a little bit. He stopped halfway through. It was getting dark. He was like, man, I don't know what's going on. But I was all in, and I was ready to take the risk. So I just went for it. Now, do you think this has a happy ending? I don't know. My parents are here. I'm sure they remember all of this. But as I barreled down the hill, I didn't really calculate what would happen when I got to the bottom. I did know that there was a T in the road, so I had to decide if I was going to go right or left, right? I was either going to have to go one way or the other. But that wasn't even the worst of it, because as I made my way to the bottom, I came face to face with a major problem at it. Through the darkness, I could see at the bottom of the hill that sand had settled all the way across the street. Now, if you don't know, is a rollerblader's nightmare. And at this point, I was going way too fast to stop. So I had a split-second decision to make as I approached the bottom of the hill. I could either try my best to make a turn through the sand and hope I make it without falling, or I guess I could just keep going through the T and head down the hill that just was beyond where the road ended. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to try and make a turn. That sounds like a bad option. So I did. And as I reached the bottom, I began to make a turn to the left. And I did make the smart decision to lower my center of gravity and to sort of spread my legs so I could at least have as good a balance as possible. But as soon as I started to turn, my left skate slid out, kicked my right skate out from underneath it, and I skid across the pavement. I don't quite remember everything that happened after that. If any of you have had like an accident like this, you know that that is just sort of a blur. Like one thing happened and the next thing you know, you're just laying there. But that's what happened. I just found myself skidding and tumbling on the pavement. My friend, who's in horror at this point, he skated over to check that I was okay. And I realized as soon as I stopped skidding that I was in trouble. I could see my left arm, basically from the side of my hand all the way to my shoulder, was skinless. And I could tell that my left hip and my left leg were pretty much the same. I didn't know it at the time, but the left side of my face was skinned as well, and rocks were in it. And so, aren't you glad you came to church today? I do have a point, I promise. I'm not just telling a gross story. My friend actually helped me back about a mile back to my house. It took us forever. I was in so much pain. And I walked in the house and I screamed for my mom, and she came out like in a panic, like, what's going on? And took one look at me, and she's like, took the action. She took care of me. It was amazing. She's amazing. Happy Mother's Day, Mom. Yeah. But here's the thing. I was fortunate. I really was. You know, this was like the 90s, man. And we didn't wear protective gear, like helmets, shin pads. I had none of that stuff. Like God saved me that day. I could have broken many bones. I could have had a head injury. It could have been much worse. But I do still have a scar on my left hip. If you'd like to see, I can. I'm just kidding. I'm not going to do that. We're not that kind of church. I will say this. In hindsight, I should have known better that something like this might happen, because the name of the subdivision was Sandy Hills. That's no joke. I was 12. You know, I didn't know what a... But here's my point. Have you ever had a moment like this in your life? You know, where you're barreling down the hill of life and you look to the bottom and you realize, this is going to be bad. This is not going to end well. You find yourself barreling towards a wreck, and you aren't sure in that moment what you're going to do or where you're going to turn. You find yourself on a crash course towards disaster, and it seems like you may have too much momentum to stop it. You ever been there before? Right? Maybe you're headed toward that financial wreck, and you could see it coming, but you're not really sure what to do. Or maybe you're headed towards a career disaster. You're headed towards and barreling towards a relationship wreck. Maybe your spiritual life, you know, it's headed toward inevitable disaster. Now, I've been there, and I don't mean just on rollerblades when I was 12 years old. I've been there. I've looked at the bottom of the hill and went, this is going to end badly. And I'm not really sure what to do. And I think the question becomes for us, what do we do? What do we do when we're on the verge of a wreck that we can see coming? Where do we turn? Are there any options for us in that? Is there any hope for us as we head toward it? As we turn our attention back to one of the final passages in the book of Acts, we will see one of its heroes, the Apostle Paul. And what he does is the ship he is on is headed toward inevitable disaster. So if you haven't done so yet, you can open up the YouVersion app on your phone. It's a free resource and you can follow along with everything I'm going to cover today. Just go to More and Events and you'll be able to find and follow along with us. If you have your paper Bible with you, we'll be in Acts chapter 27, believe it or not, chapter 27. Now, prior to this passage, you may remember from a couple of weeks ago, DJ talked about the fact that Paul is now on a ship to Rome. He's pled his case in Caesarea, and they're now shipping him to Caesar so that he can plead his case to Caesar himself. And he's put on this ship with other prisoners and other shipmates, and they find themselves in this torrential storm. It's been days that they've been on this weeks that they have been tossed and turned in the Mediterranean, and they're lost. They're not even sure where they are anymore. The winds are so rough, the waves and swells are so big, they have been kicked around in the Mediterranean for far too long. They're not even sure where they are any longer. And so as we pick this story up, we're going to see them about 2 weeks in to this rolling and swelling storm that they find themselves in. Verse 27. About midnight, on the 14th night of the storm, as we were being driven across the Sea of Adria, the sailor sensed land was near. Now, this last week, my wife and I obviously took a flight from London to Phoenix. It was a 10-hour flight. And other than a little discomfort for sitting for very long, the flight was pretty smooth, right? I mean, I ate decent food, and I slept a little, and I watched a couple movies. I mean, it was pretty enjoyable overall. I mean, a 10 hours in economy is not something we all look forward to, but overall, it was a pretty smooth flight. And, you know, our ability to travel around the world is incredible, you know? One comedian says, anytime you get in a plane, you should just be like, this is amazing, right? Because it would take 6 years to go from London to Phoenix before, but now we can do it in 10 hours. Now imagine, though, if you were on a near-sinking ship in the middle of a terrible storm for 2 weeks. They're tired. They are starving, they're stressed, they're seasick, they're scared. This is the situation Paul and his shipmates find themselves in. And there are really only two options for them at this point. The ship is either going to fall apart lat by lat, or they're gonna crash into land. Verse 28, they dropped a weighted line and found that the water was 120 feet deep. But a little later, they measured again and found it was only 90 feet deep. They're trying to figure out, are we nearing land? That would tell you we're getting closer. At this rate, they were afraid we would soon be driven against the rocks along the shore. So they threw out four anchors from the back of the ship and prayed for daylight. Then the sailors tried to abandon the ship. They lowered the lifeboat as they were going to put out anchors from the front of the ship. But Paul said to the commanding officer and the soldiers, "You'll all die unless you sailors stay aboard." So the soldiers cut the ropes to the lifeboat and let it drift away. Now, it's interesting. At this point, Paul has earned a lot of respect among the captain and the soldiers aboard. Some things have been going on, especially as the storm rolled on and he became this hope marker, as DJ talked about, in the boat. He's the one that has kept them alive from every moment of the storm. So while he may be a prisoner in their keep, they've gotten used to listening to Paul, even if he doesn't seem logical at the time. Which, can I just say that this is typical of how God works in our situations, especially those that seem to be heading towards a wreck. So much of what God instructs us to do goes against every instinct we may have. And yet, his word and his instructions never fail. The shipmates and the prisoners are figuring this out. I mean, it would make sense, right, to get in the lifeboat and go to shore. But to just cut it loose and get back on this ship that's falling apart doesn't seem to make sense. But somehow, Paul has gained authority in that ship because every time he speaks, every time he gives an instruction that God would give him, something good happens for them. God's word never fails. I mean, Jesus even says, if you choose to follow them, you will live. If you ignore them, it leads to death. And we're going to come back to this in a minute, but let's keep going. Verse 33, just as day was dawning, Paul urged everyone to eat. You've been so worried that you haven't touched food for 2 weeks, he said. Please eat something now for your own good, for not a hair on your heads will perish. Then he took some bread, gave thanks to God before them all, and broke off a piece and ate it. Then everyone was encouraged and began to eat, all 276 of us who were on board. After eating, the crew lightened the ship further by throwing the cargo of wheat overboard. What an odd command by Paul. Hey, you know what? I know we're rolling in these swells here, but I think we should have a meal. Let's order some pizza. Like, it's time. It's funny. It almost seems like Paul serves communion here. You hear that? He gives thanks for the bread. He breaks it. That would be just like Paul. You know what? Like, the ship's falling apart. Let's take communion, right? Let's do this the right way. But he starts with this really simple instruction. In the midst of them barreling towards a wreck, he says, I want you to eat. And isn't it funny that in situations where we find ourselves barreling towards a wreck, that sometimes we forget the most simple things we need to be doing? That sometimes we just need to have a good meal. Sometimes we need a good night's sleep. Sometimes we just need a break to figure out what it is that God would have us do next. All 276 souls fighting for their life do one of the most basic behaviors for human life. They share a meal. And then, with some renewed strength, they unload the ship to make it as light as possible. Verse 39. When morning dawned, they didn't recognize the coastline, but they saw a bay with a beach and wondered if they could get ashore by running the ship aground. So they cut off the anchors, left them in the sea. Then they lowered the rudders, raised the foresail, and headed towards shore. But they hit a shoal and ran the ship aground too soon. The bow of the ship struck first, while the stern was repeatedly smashed by the force of the waves and began to break apart. The soldiers wanted to kill the prisoners to make sure they didn't swim ashore and escape, but the commanding officer wanted to spare Paul, so he didn't let them carry out their plan. Then he ordered all who could swim to jump overboard first and make for land. The others held onto planks or debris from the broken ship, so everyone escaped safely to shore. The inevitable finally happens for them. They have been tossing and turning in the sea for 2 weeks, and they have known what's probably going to happen is we're going to crash the ship into shore. And they wreck the ship, it ignites this scene of chaos where the soldiers are saying, look, we need to kill all these prisoners because if they get ashore and they escape, it's going to be my life, not theirs, and better their life than mine. But the captain, cooler heads a little bit, he decides, no, we're not going to do that. I need to keep Paul. He's the only one keeping us alive right now. And if we kill all the prisoners, he's going to go with them. So he doesn't. And miraculously, everyone makes it to shore safely. And I just want to pause for a second because we're nearing the end of this story of the book of Acts and all that Paul has recorded or what is recorded of Paul in the book of Acts. And I just want us to take a second and appreciate all that Paul has been through. We are in the final pages of the book of Acts, and it is mind-boggling to me that Paul somehow continues on in his life. He has been tortured, imprisoned, mistreated, falsely accused, and now shipwrecked. In fact, we know from his letter in Corinthians, this wasn't his only shipwreck. Paul shipwrecked 3 times. Listen, 1 shipwreck, I'm not getting on a boat again. I'm walking. Paul, he seems okay with it. He's an expert at shipwrecks at this point. But what's maybe more amazing about Paul in all of those circumstances is how he handles them. While every other passenger is worried and in a panic, which sounds like us, right, as we're headed toward a wreck, Paul seems to remain calm and collected. He gives instructions like, you know what, we need to have a meal. We need strength to make it through this. 2 weeks of enormous swells and violent wind and torrential rains, and yet Paul remains steadfast. So much so, he is the most trusted voice on the ship. And there's good reason for it. Paul is no stranger to barreling towards a wreck. He's been through it before. He's been there before. He will be there again. But in every situation he finds himself in, Paul displays something that is vital for anyone who is heading towards a wreck in life. If you're heading towards some sort of wreck in life, you need to know that when heading towards a wreck, it is time to flex your trust. But Paul, while the rest of the ship scrambles in fear, Paul flexes his trust in God in ways that we, I think, lose sight of. Paul is clearly aware of what is necessary for him to not only survive the inevitable wreck approaching, but to do it in such a way that it will put on full display the goodness and grace of God. And it will save all of those who are on board as well. And so when we're headed towards a wreck, when we could see the bottom of the hill and we're like, I'm not sure what to do, Paul says, here's what you do. Flex your trust in God. Trust him like you've never trusted him before. And in particular, I think there's three things that Paul's doing here that teach us how to flex our trust in God in situations. And the first is we need to learn to trust God's presence as we're barreling towards a wreck. It's not uncommon to begin to believe that God somehow abandoned us as things get rough. The circumstances seem to indicate God has chosen to leave us to our own devices. You know what? You're gonna head in that direction, good luck. The passengers on the ship, they're this mindset. They have determined they're on their own and need only to depend on their own instincts, which would probably have gotten them killed. Paul never doubts God's presence in this situation. He even knows that no matter what happens at the site of the shipwreck, God is present. And it's possible that you have been going through it for a long time. And that you have, through it all, been doubting or denying God's presence in your life and circumstances. And as you head towards a potential wreck, it's time to renew your trust in his continued presence in your life. He hasn't abandoned you. He is with you in the storm and in the wreck. Some of Jesus' final words to his first followers were, I am with you always. Always, especially when you're barreling towards a wreck. So at all times, flex your trust in God's presence, especially when the bottom of the hill looks scary. Second way we ought to flex our trust in God is to trust God's instructions. And I know, here I am again talking about the Bible. Get used to it, people. It's gonna happen. But listen, and I mean this with as much love and grace as I can muster. Some of you are heading towards a wreck because you have failed to trust God's instructions. Like the soldiers on the ship responded to Paul's instructions to cut the lifeboat loose, God's instructions may seem counter to what you would expect, but who cares? Because guess what? You're barreling towards a wreck because you've been doing it your own way for far too long. And it's time to start trusting God's instructions like you've not been before. Now, it's true that some storms and some wrecks are out of our control. That's pretty much true of these men and women who are on this ship. The 276 people on this ship, look, They got on a boat to go to Rome, and next thing they know, they're crashing into shore. They had very little control over the situation. Things can happen that we have no control over, and circumstances can lead toward disaster and a wreck. I get that, but I want to be real for a second. Because the majority of our situations heading toward a wreck are self-inflicted. We have doubted or denied God's plan for our lives, and it has thrown us into this storm that just keeps pushing us closer and closer to shore. And in the midst of that, there is no better time to begin flexing your trust in God's instructions again. To sit down and go, God, I have made a mess of things. I don't think this is gonna end well. Tell me what to do, and I will do it, and I will trust it. Paul trusts God's instructions. Paul does what he knows God would have him do as they're barreling towards a wreck. Have a meal, stay on the boat, get to shore safely. And not only does he follow it, but he commands those who are with him to follow it as well. Finally, as we're heading toward a wreck, we need to flex our trust in God's promises. This may be the way in which Paul flexes his trust more than anything else in this situation. Because Paul knows the end of the story. He knows that no matter what the storm or shipwreck may, whatever might come, he will not lose sight of what God has already promised. He's not worried because he knows the end of the story. He knows the promises of God, and he will put his trust in that long before he'll put his trust in some captain on a ship in the Mediterranean. And he knows, should this be the end for him? If he doesn't make it, well, he knows the future. And should he survive? He also knows God's way. He knows God's way of operating. Paul knows God won't waste this wreck. Hey, look, if I crash and I make it to shore, hey, look, God's gonna use this in some way, and I'm gonna trust that. I'll trust that promise. You see, there is no promise that we won't wreck our lives. But there is a promise that God will redeem whatever wreck we may endure. In fact, it's likely that you have seen God redeem past wrecks in your life, but you have lost sight of the fact that that promise is still true. It doesn't mean we should go looking for ways to wreck our lives, right? Like, God's gonna redeem this. Here we go, down the hill. Like, that's not the point of this. But it does give us hope that even our worst wrecks in life will not be for naught. In fact, if you're heading towards a wreck, I think it's important to realize that this is exactly where God does his best work. When a couple flexes their trust in God as their marriage is headed toward disaster, look out, God shows up in mighty ways. When a person flexes their trust in God as they head towards bankruptcy, watch God provide a way through it. When a student flexes their trust in God as they head towards a failing class or a failing grade, they will not only experience his peaceful presence, but gain a view of the future beyond whatever wreckage may have happened. When a person flexes their trust in God with their personal life, as it barrels toward disaster, and some of you are right in the throes of that right now, you look at your life and you're like, man, how did I get here? And I am afraid of how this might end. When you flex your trust in God, God has a way of helping you pick up the pieces and move forward. You know, I was fortunate as a kid. I left my rollerblading wreck with only a few scars, and I still have those scars. In fact, some of you still have scars from your past wrecks. And I hope that they'll serve as reminders of how faithful God has been to you. But I hope they'll also remind you of the power that exists when we flex our trust in God in ways we might not otherwise do as we head toward a potential wreck in our life. Wrecks are bound to happen. It's gonna happen. If you're not heading towards one right now, just wait a few days, you know? It's bound to happen. It's part of the world we live in. We live in a broken world. But when they do, may we remember how faithful God has been to us in the past, and may we flex our trust in him once again. Let's pray. God, it amazes me the trust that I see Paul has in you, and what had to have been an incredibly fearful and scary moment in his life. Thank you for his example. Thank you for the ways in which you exampled what it looks like for us to surrender and trust you fully, especially in times when we are barreling down the hill, where disaster is right around the corner. I am so grateful, God, that in that moment, you are still there. And even though we may wreck, even though something disastrous might happen, God, that you will be with us. God, that you will redeem that situation, that your promises will remain true no matter what. But in this moment right now, God, I pray that we as a people would flex our trust in our lives in you. God, that we would turn ourselves over to you again this morning. And especially if we are either looking at the wreckage of something that has happened in our life, we are heading towards a wreck in our life, or whether that is gonna happen sometime down the road, God, I just pray that we would be reminded that you are ever so present, that you have given us every instruction that we need, and that your promises will remain true, come what may. We thank you for Jesus, who endured the greatest wreck for us. Lord, through the death on the cross that he endured, you would use that to redeem all of humanity, all those who would place their faith in you. So this morning, I pray that we would commit to a greater depth of trust in you. Thank you for never leaving us, for being with us, for giving us hope in the midst of the wrecks of life. It's in your name we pray. Amen.